So I think the book shows that at the end of the day, she can't speak candidly to her father. In the end, he's going to do what he's going to do. Although, you know, again, it is complicated. He gave Jared that security clearance. I mean, against everyone else's advice.
We're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to do part two, post it online. Vicky Ward, investigative journalist, author of the new book, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. I'll be speaking at Smith College tonight at 7. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up, it's Voices from the Edge with our host, Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. She talks with Kaya Sand and Emily Green from Street Roots to discuss the 9/11 call center. That's up next. At 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, taking a look at geoengineering. At 9:30, Per Fogering is in for Fight the Empire. He takes a look at St. Matthew Island, the island of dead reindeer in the Bering Sea. At 10, Heather McCoy hosts the Heather McCoy Show. And at 11, on Between the Covers, David Naiman welcomes author Mitchell Jackson about Survival Math, a book that explores gangs and guns, near-death experiences, sex work, masculinity, composite fathers, the concept of hustle, and the destructive power of addiction. And all of this important programming is made possible by support of members. To become a KBOO member, go to kboo.fm, click on the button, mark donate. Stay with us. Voices from the Edge with Joanne Hardesty is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Monday, March 25th at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Circuit Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to Fire campaign is part of the national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures Out of Detroit. This peaceful protest calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Monday, March 25th at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City. For more information, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Community Forum on Zenith Tar Sands expansion on Tuesday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at City Hall in Portland. The Community Forum on Zenith Tar Sands expansion will address the realities of climate breakdown and the expansion of fossil fuels infrastructure. The event will pose questions about oil train traffic along the Columbia River, impacts on First Nations, and more. Again, that's the Community Forum on Zenith Tar Sands expansion on Tuesday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Great God will come from the sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah. Get up, stand up. Yeah, yeah. Stand up for your rights.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am so thrilled this morning to have representatives of my favorite newspaper on the planet, Street Roots, in the studio. I have Kara San and Edwards, I know, is the last name, and I just blanked.
Emily Green.
Emily Green. Emily Green, a fabulous reporter, and they have just done a very in-depth series about one of my favorite topics, the 911 call center, and how we could improve that to make sure that we are sending the right first responders at the right time to the right scene. And so, Kara, why don't I start with you, and then we'll get into the details that you found during your reporting. So, welcome to the studio. And tell, I'm still not used to that title. Let me just say. This is a wonderful, wonderful, and lots of people are talking about the in-depth research that you've done. So what led you to want to do this in-depth reporting on especially this topic?
Well, at Street Roots, we, I think, are in a pretty unique position where we have a reporter, a newspaper that does hard-hitting journalism, and we have our Street Roots vendors who sell the paper, and we have about 170 people a week who sell it, and about half of whom are homeless. And then we have the portion of advocacy that I'm connected to as director. So there's a firewall, and this the newspaper is doing all their important investigating and reporting, and then I can advocate, and the vendors are telling us, you know, what they desperately need and what they care about. And legal entanglements, difficulties with crises, difficulties with the police, all of these are things that we hear day in, day out. So through that kind of triangulation of our mission, it was very, very, very clear that this is important.
Wonderful. And so, Emily, you did some really incredible writing around what you learned as you started looking at how we could change the system. And were you one of the people that went to Eugene to look at Cahoots, or was that you, Kara?
That was
me. Okay. And so I love the Portland Street Response. Tell us what the Portland Street Response is.
Sure. And, you know, I haven't done a ride-along with Cahoots, but having lived in Eugene for many years, mm-hmm. I was quite familiar with what they did. And moving to Portland, it was really surprising that there was nothing like it here.
Right.
So I wanted to look at, you know, how would something like this work in Portland? Would it be an expansion of an existing program, or would it need to be something entirely new? The one thing we knew for certain is that it should not involve the police bureau. So after looking at all the different programs that are out there right now responding to public safety and health issues on the street, being Portland Street Medicine, Central City Concerns Cheers program, and Project Respond, as well as Portland Fire and Rescue's chat program, only one expressed interest in becoming something like CAHOOTS.
Interesting.
Yep. And that was Portland Fire and Rescue's chat program. And CHAT stands for Community Assessment Health Team. I'm sorry, Community Health Assessment Team. And that is a basically one-man team. It's
yes.
Tremaine Clayton. He manages it and is the sole staff. And right now, it's really aimed at lowering high 911 utilizers from
yes.
calling 911 over and over again. Some call as many as five times a day.
Mm-hmm.
But Tremaine has worked with Whitebird, which is the nonprofit that runs the CAHOOTS program down in Eugene. And he loves the way they approach clinical work.
Right.
He's learned a lot from them. And his dream, really, he said, is to turn the chat program into something like CAHOOTS.
And that is a wonderful program that, quite frankly, came about because of the need, right? Because mm-hmm. it is clear that 911 calls to the call center just keep going up, 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 up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Street Roots that actually also reported on the reason that these 911 calls are going up a lot. As many calls are because people are houseless out in the community. So they're calling the police to remove quote-unquote unwanted people, which is heartbreaking. Before I got to City Hall, there was already an effort going on to assess whether nurse triages, mental health professionals, who is the right first responder when people on the street are in crisis. And so tell me about how this would work.
All right, so what we're imagining is, first, the goal is to lower police response to disorder calls. Willamette Weekly recently reported that there's over 130,000 disorder, which are low priority nuisance calls to the police every, or at least in, I think it was 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the goal. And we imagine there would be six vans. They would be logoed so that they would have a presence in the community. People would know who's showing up. People would become familiar with them and aware that there's something besides police that can respond to these calls. We'd like to see six teams. That number we arrived on through conversations with dispatchers and Lisa St. Helen, the operations manager at the Bureau of Emergency Communications. She said, you know, six teams could stay really busy responding to these types of calls in the metro area.
Mm-hmm. And would that be 24 hours a day,
so
if we had six teams?
Yeah, I think, you know, it really takes some working with the police department to see when, you know, the level of calls is higher and when
uh-huh.
more teams would be available to really figure out exactly how many teams are out at a time. But I know we're kind of looking at just Portland
mm-hmm.
as, you know, the launch of this program, although metro-wide would be great. But we thought, you know, six teams, staying busy, and then having a little extra time to do outreach when they're not responding to calls so that their initial interaction with some members of the homeless community is from public safety and health, you know, proactive engagement as opposed to, you know, responding in a crisis would be really beneficial. We think that at most this big response would cost about $4.8 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's based on what it costs to operate a rapid response vehicle team at Portland Fire and Rescue. It's about $800,000 to keep one van operating around the clock 365 days a year. And that's with two very highly trained, highly paid firefighter EMTs running it. For our teams, we'd like to see one firefighter EMT and one peer support specialist,
mm-hmm.
with both receiving some critical training in de-escalation and behavioral health issues. The peer support specialist could be another tier of employee at the Fire and Rescue. If there's pushback from the union on that, which there could be, it could also be a third-party contract. Clackamas County has great success doing third-party contracts with peer support specialists.
And I think it's perfect timing, because as Multnomah County starts talking about opening a drop-in mental mm-hmm. health center downtown, it is another tool, right, to actually help serve people who are in crisis. And my understanding of the vision of that center would be the first floor would be peer-to-peer support, the second floor would be social service supports, and then there would be some transitional housing on 3 and 4. On floors 3 and 4. And so that just sounds like it's just another piece that would help make people in the community safer. I am so thrilled that we're having this conversation now, because as you know, the city's in the midst of our budget conversation right now. And the first thing they're going to say is that we can't afford this, but I think you made the case strongly that the amount of resources that we're already spending to respond to quote-unquote nuisance calls could certainly be diverted to a more humane approach.
You know, and it's not just the police department. We looked at a study that came out last spring by a couple of grad students at the PSU's School of Social Work, Catherine Lindsay and Kathleen Evans. And they looked at the city's invisible spending on its response to street homelessness. And they found across bureaus, especially Bureau of Transportation, Development Services, Parks and Rec, and even City Hall, that staff were spending anywhere from 5 minutes to 8 hours a day directly or indirectly responding to street homelessness. Mm. And in some cases, this was working on policy, but the vast majority was working on enforcement issues. Mm-hmm. And they just looked at a very small sample, just under 3% of staff. And that small sample alone, the spending was $3.6 million in a year. And that doesn't include the money that's being spent through the One Point of Contact program, which right. is camp cleanup and hygiene.
Right. So if you're just joining the conversation, I am talking to Kara San and Emily Green, both from Street Roots. One is the executive director, that's Kara, and Emily is a senior reporter. And they, if you have not seen this incredible report, I'm always excited when Street Roots does an in-depth article, because the kind of investigative reporting you guys have done for years is just pretty phenomenal. But now there's a new advocacy arm, right? So it's like, okay, normally you would just put it out there and see what people did with it. But you've decided that this time you're going to take a different tactic as well.
Well, and I'm carrying forward a mantle that I think is pretty impressive. The fact that, you know, when Israel Bayer was out there fighting for against the sit lie
yes,
ordinances
yes.
and really making sure that we were steadfast
yes.
in our opposition, or also in terms of housing funding and helping form the coalition, the Welcome Home Coalition, to support the Portland bond. So I do
so
see
it's
this.
Not new, right?
But I want to give credit
right,
where
right,
credit's due. And
right.
I think about a lot of Emily Green's reporting that has led to change. And I have a lot of pride in all that Street Roots has done for these past 20 years. But I will say that this is so exciting, this plan. We have, you know, our newspaper is doing its piece. Our vendors are, when we announced this plan to our vendors, to about 70 vendors, they broke out in cheers.
Wow.
And people are talking to me every day. I have one person who's really good at slogans. He keeps emailing me slogans. He was talking actually about the hat Israel used to wear
right,
that said
right.
stay human.
Yes.
And he was saying, how do we get at that, right?
Yes.
The idea of, you know, this is about being human
yes.
and not criminal. These are all, you know, when you look at the disorder calls, which I feel like all these terms sometimes are a little bit confusing to me, but when I break down disorder, in the Katie Shepherd Willamette Week article, she breaks it down with disorder calls are welfare checks
mm-hmm.
and unwanted person calls.
Right.
Unwanted person calls, according to that article, come in about every 15 minutes
mm-hmm.
For 911 dispatchers. I mean, just take that in for a moment.
Right,
it's
right.
amazing. And that's a lot of what CAHOOTS deals with in
yes.
Eugene. These are things that the police don't need to be dealing with. And there's that new report that came out this week of a strategic report from an outside consulting firm for the Portland Police Bureau. And one of the things that they really emphasize in there is that this whole, you know, role as first responders requires a different skill set than the police currently have,
yes,
right?
Right.
And so my thinking with this is, if we think about it as kind of a train on the tracks, right? We're on, it's wrong train, wrong tracks, right? We need to get an entirely different system. We don't need the police to be doing non-police work.
And quite frankly, I don't believe that there are many police officers that want to do that work either, right?
Exactly.
And so it is a perfect, I think, a perfect coming together of different studies and expertise. I have not had a chance to fully read that report, but some of the data that I've seen is pretty kind of horrific, right? If you've got 72% of police who are saying, you know, we just don't think that we're having an impact, or we don't think that people know what it is we do, that's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they don't think that the community knows and trusts and believes that they're the right people to call, it just really changes the dynamic. So I'm excited because I do think, from what I've learned from managing the 911 call center, is that there are just so many calls that people call the police because the police is the, I think, knee-jerk response when you call 911. One of the other big changes happening at the city is a 311 information line, which I think will be huge because when I got to the city, I found out there was 147 information lines at the city of Portland, right? So if you're a member of the public, how would you ever know which line to pick to get to the right person that you would like? If you'd like to join the conversation, by the way, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So with the addition of the mental health drop-in center downtown, with the change at the city to a 311 information line that will incorporate all information through just one central number, with some a model like Portland Street Response, what we should see is less need for armed police officers in many, many, many of these situations. And so any other information that surprised you when you were putting this report together, Emily?
Well, I think, you know, it's important to emphasize, you know, why we think this should be a response that is free of law enforcement. We've done some other reporting in the last few months around the impact of fines and fees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we learned that people experiencing extreme poverty, the criminal justice system is just so much harsher on them.
Yes.
And for example, in circuit courts across Oregon, if you want to set up a payment plan, they tack on an additional $50 to $200 fee just to do that.
Yes.
So already you're paying more because you can't afford to pay your fine. If that goes to collections, an additional 28% of the total is added on.
Wow.
And we've just seen the cycle of poverty that it perpetuates. And when we're talking about, you know, people who are experiencing homelessness and substance abuse orders, mental health issues, you know, here in Oregon, for example, last year, Kate Brown said addiction is a health crisis. It is a health issue. And I think there's a growing consensus that a lack of housing is a health care issue, too. And yet we are still in practice responding to it as a criminal issue. So what we'd really like to see, you know, is that flip for, you know, our response to match our values and to not create more barriers for people who are trying, you know, just to survive.
Right.
And I think we should be clear, too. This is not going to end homelessness. This is not something that we believe should come out of any housing programs or budgets to help get at the real root causes. In a perfect world, we wouldn't need this. We would have access to mental health care and substance abuse treatment when people need it, and, you know, housing. But while we're working in other ways to get at those root issues, we can stop treating the symptom in such a harsh way and just making lives more difficult for people on the streets.
I'm really grateful how you put, you know, made that clear that we don't want people to look at this as a reason to take money away from other services that are about shelters, that are about hygiene, that are about housing, right? This is very particularly about first response, about that kind of work. I also think it's really compelling that at the same time that we're putting out this report, we are launching a pilot at Street Roots through the Housing Bureau and Metropolitan Public Defenders to bring in legal clinics to our Street Roots vendors to work on expungements.
Wonderful.
And that part, the reason for this pilot is to look at barriers that people face in terms of housing and employment. So it's going to be a longitudinal study to follow people in terms of what happens if they are able to get these expungements through. But I emphasize that because, of course, we really don't want to have to be doing that in the first place, right?
Right.
I mean, it would be a lot better to just reduce the legal entanglements that poor people face.
Well, and I think it was 2018, 52% of arrests by Portland police officers were of people, but for being houseless, would not have entered our criminal justice system. And for me, that is just criminal. It is criminal that we are criminalizing people in our community for being poor and not providing resources. I mean, the biggest problem around housing, in my view, in Portland, is that we don't have enough housing people can afford to live in,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's the big problem. And we tend to, as a society, blame the people who are not able to afford how expensive this city has become.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to stop blaming people because they just don't make enough money to be able to live in these properties. I think we still have 16,000 vacant properties in the city of Portland. But again, it's just not properties that working people can afford to live in.
Mm.
And so I am very excited about this project because, you know, we tend to be very good here at pointing out what the problem is, mm-hmm. but not that good at pointing out what the solution could
mm-hmm.
be. And so I suspect that you're getting lots of positive feedback, I know from vendors, but also from the public.
We are. It's really interesting. We're getting feedback from business owners. I mean, that's one thing I've been really struck by when I go around and talk to different groups. Like I spoke recently to a hospitality group, and everyone there is concerned about learning de-escalation skills.
Yes.
I mean, there are so many people in the city who want to help. They want things to go well, and the system itself is wrong.
Yes.
And we hear this again and again. We just had a Max driver retweet our plan to say, this is what we need. You know,
excellent.
I mean, I love the fact that it's all over the city. And I will say, I want to sing the praises of an engaged media
yes.
here at KBOO, being a director of Street Roots, because I feel like there's been momentum built by our engaged media from that report, Commissioner, that you mentioned from last summer
yes.
from the Oregonian, that in 2017, 52% of all arrests affected unhoused people, to what Street Roots did and that reporting that Emily did on the fines and fees,
yes.
to actually Street Roots' interview with Chief Outlaw, where she made clear that there are so many calls they're dealing with that are outside of criminal nexus, and they need
yes.
a different plan, a different system, to the Willamette Week reporting that Katie Shepard did on 911, to then culminating in what
right.
I'm extraordinarily proud of is Emily Green's work on this Portland Street response. So we have an engaged, enlivened media, an informed public. Everyone's ready to go.
And they're starting to connect the dots that
yes.
we cannot continue to do what we have been doing and somehow expect different results. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Kara Sand and Emily Green, both from Street Roots, our favorite community newspaper. We are talking about a plan that they've proposed called Portland Street Response, which would revitalize how 911 call center, who they sent to the call, and how they responded to calls for service. It is absolutely clear if you spend any time at the 911 call center that they're finally up to a full staff level, but those folks are taking calls nonstop for their entire 8-hour shift. And today, it's really difficult to determine who is the appropriate right responder. Sometimes today we send fire, we send police, and we send the ambulance for good measure. So we send everything that we have available as far as first responders, but most of the time that's not what's needed or necessary. And many times neither of those three are the appropriate people to be there. That's why Tremaine's program has been so successful. But it's also sad because Tremaine is the only person who actually now has responsibility for that. It is my hope that as we get out of this budget cycle, that we start looking at how we can rearrange staff so that Tremaine has help in other parts of the city, and that we're not waiting for brand new resources to actually be responsive to this effort. Because I think with a $6 billion budget in the city of Portland, it's not that we don't have the resources to fix it. It's just how we're spending those resources now.
Well, Cahoots and Eugene saves the city money. Their budget is, what, $1.6 million, and
right.
They save over $8 million in some estimates for the Eugene police. So it could really help.
I anticipate that it absolutely would help us mm-hmm. because, again, we would be sending the right responder yeah. to the right thing at the right time. What's next? So I suspect that there is there a campaign effort that
there
is
taking
place?
I'm so glad you asked. We're hearing from all kinds of people. So yes, Portland Street Response. You can actually email portlandstreetresponse@streetroots.org to just get on a list and start learning about actions. We want people to turn out for the budget meetings on April 2nd at ERCO. If you sign up at 5:30, you can get into a lottery, at least, to speak, but we'd love to just fill the space with people who support Portland Street Response and support the $187,000 position for developing a pilot that would be through the Bureau of Emergency Communications.
Yes.
I mean, we will not let up. Whether it's Portland Fire and Rescue, whether it's money for training, Whitebird, Cahoots and Eugene, they have indicated they would happily come train all of us in Portland, train the city in Portland to do this. They are already doing that with Olympia.
Wonderful.
And they've also been in conversation with Denver and with New York City. So you know, when you look at from Olympia to New York City, this is they're really looking at how do you scale this up and down.
Wow. And reminding the listeners that it took them 30 years to actually create the model that now works so successfully. And I think also what's unique in Eugene is that the 911 call center is actually located within the police department, which is totally different here. We're not connected. And I'm happy that Chief Outlaw has no desire to connect the two because they are a separate operations, but I think that helps Eugene, of course, is a lot smaller than Portland, but they've got 30 years of experience, so that we could learn a lot from them about what worked and what didn't work as they were rolling it out.
We're fortunate.
And Kaya, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe something else the campaign is pushing for is a quicker timeline as well.
Yes.
You know, looking at the strategic plan from the Bureau of Emergency Communications and that nurse triage program that you mentioned, if a Cahoots style or Portland Street Response team were to be part of this, the earliest it could be up and running is in 3 years and 7 months. And that's if that position Kaya just mentioned gets funded. Right now, the city budget office has recommended against funding that. So that
yes.
puts it out even farther.
Right.
Given the thousands of people that are run through and traumatized by the criminal justice system, and when things escalate too much, potential loss of life, I mean, just in the last 3 years alone, according to a list kept by the Mental Health Association of Portland, police have shot at 13 people experiencing a mental health crisis or acute reaction to drugs and alcohol, and 7 of them died.
Right.
So we think 3 years and 7 months, potentially 4 years, almost 5 years, is just too long.
I absolutely agree with you on that. I want us to do this today,
yes.
right?
And
yes.
Emily, what you talked to the interim chief about this mm-hmm. in terms of the timeline.
I did. I asked interim chief Ryan Gillespie what he thought his department could do. And first, I want to make clear, you know, he emphasized that while he thinks Portland Fire and Rescue is set up for this, with the right training could do this, is supportive of this, he does have a couple barriers. One is this would need to be new money. He doesn't want to lose fire engines
right,
to do
right.
this, and it's completely understandable. Second, there needs to be union support. He mm-hmm. said he'd be remiss to commit to anything without the support of the union.
Mm-hmm.
And but he said, you know, with new money and that support and the right training, he thinks he could actually have something up and running within 18 months at the soonest.
So well, let's fund it.
Yeah, well, and one of the challenges is actually the Bureau of Emergency Communication is actually upgrading the data system by which 911 call takers make decisions about who they deploy to those calls. And so even if fire and rescue was ready in 18 months, I think it's still going to be 18 months before that data system has been updated and then staff retrained. Because what happens now is a lot is instinctive based on the call taker's experience. And this new system will actually be more directive, right? So it's like call takers will have less of a choice as to who they send, but they're going to be they will know more information about what's needed at that scene than they do today, right? So and so the good news is that the rest of the first responder system, the Bureau of Emergency Communication, the Bureau of Emergency Management, and Fire and Rescue are all in my portfolio. And so one of the things that we're doing is when they make their budget presentation the first week of April, is all three are presenting their budget to the City Council together. Because it's my desire and intent to show that this is a system of services and not just siloed bureaus who are there advocating for their own individual budget.
Commissioner, are there good things then for people who turn out to that forum to keep in mind with those three bureaus all presenting together?
Yes, that these are the ones that are first responders that basically operate with the philosophy, I think, of do no harm, right? It's like whenever you see a fire coming, you think help is on its way. I wish people felt that way when they saw the police coming, but the reality is that most people don't. And so it's a matter of having the right first responder. So I think that's one of the important things is that they have a seamless system. This weekend, I had the good fortune of actually watching how my bureaus worked cooperatively together with the flooding off of Killingsworth and 22nd. And then there was a house fire in North Portland a couple hours after that. And what I realized is just they're accustomed to stepping up and stepping back based on what's happening at the scene at any given time. And I thought, you know, this is absolutely, the public should see this. The public should be able to see that there's no ego involved. It's like, who's the appropriate person to be in the lead now? Mm-hmm. And that person gets into the lead. And so I think several things to note is that we can't neglect any part of our first responder system. We need a seamless system so that we have the right responders to send. I think that's a good message for folks to have. And we cannot pit one segment of our first responder against another, because any weakness in one part of the system will make all the other parts weak as well. In fact, we tried to get the police to actually join us in our first responder presentation, and they politely declined. They want to do their own, which I'm fine with that. But it is always funny because it's like, well, if you want to present yourself as we are the first responders, then I would have thought they would have taken good advantage of that.
Yeah.
I think seeing Street Roots vendors, hearing Street Root vendor stories about what the challenges are when you are houseless and you're trying to get a leg up and get a new place to live. I think the real life experiences of what it takes to get into housing, because we talk about housing like it's just a piece of cake. You just build it and then people show up and you rent it to them and then life goes on. Do we have any callers on the line? No, nobody wants to talk to us today. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Sometimes we just shock the audience so much that they just, like, they sit there with their, like, whoa. And then at the end, they all try to get in at the last minute. So you want to beat the rush.
I do want to address something that you said a moment ago, Commissioner. getting that nurse triage program and the new ProQA software up and running at BOIC will obviously take some time.
Right.
And we thought about that. You know, there's been a sergeant stationed at the 911 dispatch center since November.
Right.
And it's a rotating sergeant. They're already fielding a lot of these calls, talking to callers and saying, for example, you know, it's not illegal for someone to sit on the sidewalk.
Right.
Do you really want a police officer to come there and tell you that? And right now they're handling about 9% of calls that are coming through in some way. And we don't see why the sergeant and also the fire and safety person who's also stationed down there can't kind of help field some of these calls and direct them toward a Portland street response while we're waiting for this system to get its accreditation and up and running.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, even today, we know that there are nurse triages with all the HMOs that operate within the Portland metro area. So is it possible for us to connect the 911 call center with Multnomah County Mental Health Services, right? Or with the nurses that currently are part of the 24-hour response? What we know about triage nurses is they will stay on the phone as long as they need to stay on the phone to make people comfortable and to make people, to help people kind of work through what they need. You're absolutely right, and I expect and want you guys to like push us to like to be as quick as possible and as efficient as possible. But the it's like we also want to make sure that it's something we start that we can continue to move forward, because the worst thing to do is to start having success and then have to backtrack because of budget or other considerations. Looks like we have a caller on the line. Good morning, Marlene. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne, and thank you for the show this morning.
You're welcome.
My question is, I'm involved with Disarm at TSU, and I'm wondering if this program is at all being considered as something that could become part of how Portland State polices itself. I think we need something like this in Portland State, and I'm just trying to figure out if it would be better for Portland State to create its own, or if something like this could incorporate Portland State. I can take my answer off the air.
Well, thank you so much, Marlene, for the question, and I think we got some answers for you.
Okay. Yes, I do think that there's a lot of problems with the way in which the Margolis-Healy report came out and really conflated homelessness and public safety at PSU. The thing that I would say in response is that, you know, there's a problem right now with just the over-policing of PSU.
Right.
And PSU is right in the city. We're not proposing this specifically for PSU as much as the fact that everyone should be calling first responders in the city and not looking at Portland State University as having to provide this sort of separate first responder system, especially if it's armed.
I totally agree with that. And I think, Kara, that the PSU sits in the middle of an urban environment. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's calling 911, especially if they're not a student, we need to have them engaged in the system of first responders that we're putting together.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Lou. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner. This is an excellent show between Kaya and Emily and yourself. I assume that the three of you haven't had a chance to listen to the last two morning programs on KBOO, which touched both on the police, but to some extent seemed to kind of demonize police. It seems like Street Roots' approach is, and the commissioner's approach is far more practical and specific. On Portland State, as a PSU person, my question's about Disarm as well. Apparently, Ramat Shureshi is the university president who instigated the Margolis-Healy report. And apparently, as was just mentioned, Margolis-Healy references houselessness apparently 104 times, even though the focus supposedly was whether police at PSU should be disarmed. Evidently, Portland State had campus police without guns for more than 47 years, and then it got instigated 3 years ago. I'm just curious if one or more of you have a prediction or a thought on strategy. The commissioner may be more up on this than Street Roots people, but in either case, to actually get Shureshi, the university president, to meet the demands in terms of strategy. And I'll take answer off the air. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Lou.
Well, this is Emily. I think that as soon as you start arming the response, you're approaching people experiencing homelessness from a place of fear.
Yes.
You know, CAHOOTS has been doing this work for 30 years with no guns, no tasers, no kind of weapon of any kind. And it's that fear-based response that Portland really could move away from. Project Respond, for example, is most frequently called to deal with mental health crisis. And I was surprised to learn they almost always bring a Portland police escort with them. And we had an experience. We had to call them to help with a situation in our vendor office a few weeks ago. And police showed up with them. And we asked, you know, please, can the police wait outside? Mm. It's very traumatizing to a lot of our vendors. You know, our staff felt comfortable with the situation inside, but they wouldn't enter the building without police. And, you know, some people may say, this is a big city, this isn't Eugene, it's much more dangerous. I'd just like to point out that New York City Health Department has a mobile crisis unit, and they don't show up with police.
Right.
And that's, I mean, talk about, that's the biggest city. They only bring police when they received information that the person is armed. So that's much more like Eugene, where they only have police on 30% of their calls. And most of the time, it's because police initially responded to the call, called CAHOOTS to take over, and then they disengaged. And in fact, Kaya had she was on one of those calls.
Right.
And if you want to talk about that, that'd be awesome.
Sure. This was a call. It was a very sad call. A woman was in crisis and was a danger to herself. And the police were sent out and CAHOOTS. And it was an extraordinary scene of compassion. The CAHOOTS people were able to really take time with her, talk to her, and as I saw repeatedly throughout the day, they were focused on the story beneath the story. You know, what was connected to the distress? In this case, the woman was in physical pain, and so the physical pain felt unbearable, and that was something she needed to talk about. And then she needed to go to Sacred Heart, to the psychiatric portion. And usually if the police had transported her, they would have had to put her in custody and handcuff her. And I learned this because a police officer turned and told me that. Mm. He said, I am so grateful that CAHOOTS is here to do this, because at least we don't have to add to her trauma. And right. That's what we would have had to do if we handcuffed her.
And what a compelling story, right? Because mm-hmm. it is, I think what we've learned over the last few years is that we have an over-reliance on police to solve social problems. And we have to stop that. We have to retrain the public that 911 is not your default when you see somebody that makes you feel uncomfortable. 911 is not the default when somebody puts a tent up across the street from your house, right? It is not illegal to be poor. Not yet in this country, but there's some folks working on that, right? I think we have to retrain the public. And so as we are revising the system of first responders, we also have to retrain the public. I think the police tell the public to call 911, right? It's like as a default. And we have to change that. We have to say for the public, you call 311 unless there's a significant emergency that's taking place at the moment, right? You don't call 911 because you think somebody might be a little dangerous, right?
I think that's so well put. I mean, as Emily was talking about, the fact that so many of us across the city are dealing with crises
yes.
all the time,
yes.
and we don't have the police with us. I, you know, think about people at the downtown library or in Powell's or all over the place, right? There's people that are doing this de-escalation work,
yes.
and instead of using fear when
yes.
it works best, they take time and they listen. Just to give a quick example, I saw something. It was last summer, and it was actually a person had a behavioral health crisis on the streets, and the police were there. And these were some officers that took a pretty, I would say, menacing approach in that particular situation. It can
right.
really vary, and I understand that. And finally, a Sisters of the Road employee who was walking by convinced them to let her kneel down, offer him cornbread and a cigarette,
mm-hmm.
and he calmed down.
You know, that's why I think the peer support specialist component of our imagined street response team is so important.
Right.
I sat down with Angel Prater, who runs Folk Time, a peer support. They supply peer support specialists to different programs in Clackamas County. And she said, even at the Clackamas County Urgent Mental Health Crisis Unit, the first person that greets someone walking in is a peer support specialist.
Yes, yes.
And the whole approach is, rather than being reactionary,
right,
it's, you know, empathize.
Yes.
A peer support specialist is someone who has lived experience with maybe mental health issues,
right,
addiction. For this team, it would be great if they maybe had some that had experience with homelessness.
Yes.
So they can do just what that person who worked at Sisters of the Road did,
right,
and sit down with that person in crisis.
Right.
Ask them how they're doing and be able to truly empathize with them and respond to it in a human way.
And to really see them and hear them and write and be concerned about what happens to them. It's kind of ironic because if you think about all the mental health service providers that we have, you never hear about them harming someone when they are in seeking service, right? We just never hear of that. But somehow we allow some segments of the community to kill people or harm people, and we act like, well, you know, there was no other result that we could have gotten, and that's not true. So we have to just not allow that assumption to live. We've got a couple of more callers. You want to get in?
Sure. Oh, I'm just gonna say really quickly that's incredibly powerful what you just said, and I'm thinking that's why when we say 16 months, we
yes,
don't want more people to die.
That's right.
So we're going to advocate always that not everything has to be sequential. We can
yes,
do a lot of this simultaneously.
Yes, we can. And we don't have to wait for one piece to be completed
yes,
before we start the next. Yes, we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Deanna. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Commissioner Hardesty and Kaya and Emily. I'm a volunteer at Street Roots, and I've been away for a little bit, so I didn't know about much of this reporting. And you're right, I didn't call in because I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm so excited to hear all of this. And so finally I said, well, they have to know someone's listening. Thank you so much. This is so exciting. I've read about CAHOOTS for quite a while and, you know, wondered why we couldn't do it here. So it sounds like I didn't come in at the very beginning. I don't know, is this going to be exactly the same as CAHOOTS? That was one question that I had. And the other is the very thing you've just been speaking about. How are we going to re-educate ourselves, the public, about this? Because that seems like a huge piece of this. Or maybe there's a simple thing, like when they call 911, it gets routed to 311. I don't know. But anyway, I'd take my answer off the air, and thank you all so much.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Emily, you want to jump in on that?
Sure. I think the main difference is, you know, CAHOOTS is run through a nonprofit, White Bird. We're proposing that Portland Fire and Rescue oversee this program. We just don't see a nonprofit response in Portland right now that is willing and ready to take on a project like this free of police response.
Mm-hmm.
However, a program at Fire and Rescue, the CHAT program, is ready to do that. So we also feel it should be a city-run program because it's the city that's really going to save a lot of money. The other big difference is we're proposing a firefighter EMT and a peer support specialist, both trained in de-escalation and behavioral health issues. And whereas CAHOOTS, I believe it's a medic and a crisis worker. So
right,
similar, but, you know, a little mm-hmm, bit different. Ours would actually be a lot bigger. CAHOOTS has about two vans responding to about 23,000 calls a year. We're proposing six around-the-clock vans that could be responding to as many as 130,000
mm-hmm,
calls that come into 911 every year. And we should be clear, if there's a criminal nexus or a potential threat or danger, that would still get a police response.
Absolutely.
These are really just for those low-level so-called disorder unwanted person calls.
Absolutely true. And coming up today on KBOO at 9, Press Watch host Teresa Mitchell, who takes a look at geoengineering. At 10, on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather looks at a YouTube and free speech with guest Dr. Michael Brown, a Christian radio host and blogger. Recently, YouTube.com
demonized his entire channel due to what they term as hate speech. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naum welcomes author Mitchell S. Jackson about Survival Math, a book that explores gangs, guns, near-death experiences, sex work, masculinity, composite fathers, the concept of hustle, and the destructive power of addiction. All that coming up on KBOO today. And if you're not a member, you should go online at kboo.fm and click on the button marked donate. We have a couple of other callers we're going to try to squeeze in. Hello, Ron. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
I'm glad to hear this is sounds like it's coming to fruition. I know we've been talking about this since at least 2011 or 12, something like that. And I thought they were sending out some kind of health professional on those calls with the police. Apparently it hasn't happened. They keep killing people.
No, unfortunately, what we did after the Department of Justice investigation was train police for 40 additional hours in how to identify and engage people who had mental health issues. But yes, that is not enough, and it's certainly not having the outcomes that we had hoped for.
Well, no, that's a whole nother conversation, because first of all, we need people to that hire cops that are capable of being cops. I was talking to some guys here about a year or so ago, and one guy asked me, well, do you know what it's like to pull a gun on somebody? Which I won't tell you my response, but the point is that there are guys out there that have no business even having guns, and they're cops.
Right.
And you know, so we need to work on that also.
You're right, but that's another longer conversation, because we still have one psychologist that pretty much rubber stamps the people that become law enforcement throughout the Portland metro area. And I still don't know how Dr. David Covey gets all those contracts, because it just doesn't make sense to me that we'd have one psychologist, which is why I think we get the results we want. But that's another day's conversation. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call.
I will say, in terms of the strategic insights report that came out this week on the police bureau, you know, that we saw that there's just an extraordinary trust issue,
yes,
across the board, but in particular with African American, Native American, Pacific Islander, Portlanders.
We're talking 85% to 87%.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of insane. Right?
So it's such extreme issues, and also in terms of response time, which goes right back to our issue.
Yes.
So I do want to make a little plug that we will have an editorial on this in the issue that hits the streets tomorrow. So for those of you who don't know the rhythms of Street Roots, the new issue hits the street every Friday. So always look for your vendors.
All righty. And we got one more caller that we're going to try to squeak in. Hello, Jay. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for the show. This is great stuff. I'm curious, before becoming too enthusiastic, I wonder about that program where there were supposed to be mediators showing up along with the cops to de-escalate situations that were potentially life-death situations. And the impression I got was that they always showed up, or they were acknowledged after the shooting had taken place between the cops and whoever was melting down.
Right, so you're talking about the crisis response team, which, again, has been a program that's been part of Portland Police Bureau's toolkit for some time. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But again, you're sending really the wrong people with the wrong approach to the wrong calls. And so what we're going to try to do is make sure that that just doesn't ever happen again. Thank you so much for your call. We are out of time right now. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge, and I'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
It's 8:58. This is KBOO Portland, and coming up in just about 2 or 3 minutes, it's Press Watch with our host, Teresa Mitchell. She'll take a look at geoengineering. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogarang is here to talk about St. Matthew's Island, the island of dead reindeer in the Bering Sea. At 10, the Heather McCoy Show. Heather looks at YouTube and free speech with guest Dr. Michael Brown, a Christian radio host and blogger. Recently, YouTube demonetized his entire channel due to what they termed as hate speech. At 11 Between the Covers, host David Naiman welcomes author Mitchell Jackson about survival math, a book that explores gangs and guns, near-death experiences, sex work, masculinity, composite fathers, the concept of hustle, and the destructive power of addiction. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate. It is 8:59, and Press Watch is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the world premiere of Jump, co-produced by Confrontation Theater and the Milagro Theater. The play runs from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Jump is the story of a 20-something who is reeling from the death of her mother. She is looking for solace in a good place to vape, but what she finds is a journey of self-discovery. Again, that's Jump, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, I suppose the big news today is Cyclone Idai, or is it? It's kind of down in the news roll if you look at the news aggregators. So I would encourage you to actually have a look at it and particularly pull up Al Jazeera or BBC and look at the aerial footage, which will tell you as much as you can get from the text at this point. To say it's a devastating cyclone isn't enough. It is clearly a next level climate destruction cyclone.